This is a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts. The FE2 in Royal Flying Corps Service. This podcast is based on material previously published in the article The Royal Aircraft Factory FE2B/D in RFC, RNAS and AFC Service by Cross and Cockade International, the First World War Aviation Historical Society. Those that flew the Royal Aircraft Factory FE2, commonly nicknamed FEE, always spoke with affection about the aircraft, but its subsequent reputation has been overshadowed by the heavy losses suffered in the spring of 1917, when it was clearly outclassed by a new generation of German fighters. Of the 275 aircraft lost by the Royal Flying Corps during the so-called Bloody April, more than 70 were flown by day squadrons operating the FE2B or FE2D. Even so, the popular image of a hapless, lumbering two-seater outfought by faster and more nimble German fighters is largely misplaced. And it certainly ignores the FEE's outstanding performance in 1916 when the RFC soundly defeated the German air arm during the Battle of the Somme, achieving air superiority, if not air supremacy, for several months. Flown aggressively and with a good air gunner, the FEE, and particularly the FE2D with its more powerful Rolls-Royce Eagle engine, was able to give a good account of itself in air combat, even as late as the summer of 1917. A number of German aces discovered just how dangerous the FEE could be, not least Manfred von Richthofen, who was badly wounded on the 6th of July 1917 by return fire from 2nd Lieutenant A.E. Woodbridge in an FE2D of 20 squadron flown by Captain D.C. Cunnell. Another reason for the FEE's mixed reputation may be its less than glamorous appearance. To modern eyes, the pusher configuration looks particularly antiquated. The FEE never possessed the angular menace of its Royal Aircraft Factory stablemate, the SC-5A, the powerful sleekness of the Albatross D-3, or the delicate elegance of the Newport 17. A big, large-boned aircraft, it somehow looked old before its time, yet performed outstandingly well in a wide variety of roles, from day fighting to bombing, from reconnaissance to anti-submarine operations, and from training to air defence. The FEE saw longer service on the Western Front than any other type from all the air forces engaged. Given that the FEE's lineage could be traced to before the start of the war, this was an incredible achievement and testimony to its simple design, good flying characteristics and intrinsic strength, qualities that allowed a succession of variants and modifications to be introduced as the war progressed, all born with quiet fortitude. More than 1,900 FEEs were produced and further substantial orders were in progress at the armistice. Despite the large numbers that served on the Western Front, no complete example of the type survived beyond the 1920s. One of the last remaining FEEs was scheduled to appear with an SC-5A at the 1921 Hendon Air Pageant to illustrate the progress of aeroplane design, but suffered technical problems en route. A solitary specimen did linger on in civilian guise, but soon disappeared from sight. The opportunity to recreate a FEE from substantial surviving components has been the dream of successive curators at the RAF Museum for more than 30 years. With the support of the trustees of the museum and the efforts of numerous individuals and organisations, this ambition has now been fulfilled and the FEE will join the Lancaster, Halifax and Wellington on permanent display in the Bomber Command Hall of the RAF Museum. Perhaps the last word should be left to the late Jack Bruce, noted aviation historian and deputy keeper at the RAF Museum, who had always hoped to see the FEE reborn. It was a gallant, plodding, hard-working but essentially obliging aeroplane, willing at least to try to do whatever was demanded of it. It was essentially a machine of war, and, like the good old soldier it was, it faded unobtrusively away. Although the FE2A had done well in evaluation trials conducted by the Central Flying School in early 1915, full-scale production was not feasible until increased quantities of the 120-horsepower Beardmore engine could be made available. As a result, the FEE did not appear in significant numbers on the Western Front until the beginning of 1916, even though orders for 450 examples had been placed as early as the spring of 1915. Meanwhile, the few FE2A machines that were produced with this engine were immediately sent to France to gain operational experience. There has been subsequent criticism that this lengthy delay prolonged the Fokker scourge and that the Royal Flying Corps could have regained air superiority much sooner. However, this ignores the significant engineering and supply problems that had to be overcome before quantity production could commence. Only 12 FE2As were built, serving largely with 6 squadron. The new aircraft was well received, although its impact was muted by the slow rate of deliveries. Captain Louis Strange was one of the first to fly the FE-2A in combat and wrote in his logbook that
"The FE is a fine machine, would be ideal if it were only a little faster. As it is, the Hun always seems to see us in time and avoids us like the plague, so we seldom catch him. It is, however, a splendid reconnaissance and photographic machine."
Unfortunately, there were never more than 4 to 6 machines with 6 Squadron at any one time. Meanwhile, the first production FE-2B was handed to the Royal Flying Corps on the 2nd of October 1915 and allocated to 16 Squadron on the 30th of October. By the end of the year, a total of 7 aircraft were on the strength of the British Expeditionary Force, 4 FE-2As with 6 Squadron and 3 FE-2Bs with 16 Squadron. The first complete FE-2B squadron to reach the Western Front was 20 Squadron, which arrived with its complement of 12 aircraft on the 23rd of January 1916. As it transpired, 20 Squadron became the longest-serving FE unit employed on day operations, finally relinquishing the aircraft in September 1917. Further squadrons followed as production allowed, 25 Squadron in March 1916, and then 18, 22 and 23 squadrons in April 1916, significantly increasing the frontline strength of the Royal Flying Corps in anticipation of the Battle of the Somme. Cecil Lewis has left us a typically evocative picture of 23 Squadron's departure from Gosport.
"We stood on the tarmac watching them go, and still after 20 years my heart swells at the memory of the sight. I can hear the strong engines and smell the tang of the burnt oil. I can see them as they came hurtling up, their goggled pilots and observers leaning down to wave a last farewell before they passed in a deafening flash of speed and smoke 50 feet overhead."
The FE-2B and the DH-2 Pusher Scout are popularly credited with the end of the Fokker scourge, the aerial dominance enjoyed by the Fokker single-seat monoplane. There is no doubt that the FE-2B offered a much improved field of fire and good visibility, as well as a reasonable turn of speed and a reliable engine. The most important development, however, was the operational transformation it brought about. The technical superiority of the Fokker, although never present in large numbers, had forced the Royal Flying Corps to adopt a defensive strategy that saw the introduction of formation flying for all missions east of the German lines. With the arrival of the FE-2B, a degree of parity emerged, such that individual pilots felt confident enough to take the fight to their German adversaries. These changes didn't occur overnight. German fighters continued to be dominant through the first few months of 1916. But by May, the tide was definitely turning. There were now 5 fully equipped FE-2B squadrons in France, a total of over 60 machines. From this point onwards, the Royal Flying Corps never returned to a defensive strategy. The FE-2B was the catalyst for this fundamental change in the Royal Flying Corps' thinking about air warfare and the doctrine of the strategic air offensive. The FE proved to be a popular machine, both for its flying and for its fighting characteristics. Cecil Lewis described the FE-2B as a fine machine, slow but very sturdy, and added that with good battle tactics, a flight of these machines was very deadly, even to an enemy with far greater speed and manoeuvrability. Although the defensive arrangements looked quite ungainly, with up to 3 Lewis guns mounted on a variety of pillars that required the observer to stand on the edge of the nacelle in order to fire rearwards over the top wing, they provided coverage against attack from almost all quarters. There was a blind spot immediately to the rear, but the solidity of the engine provided a degree of armoured protection for the pilot and observer. It is not clear when the idea of forming a defensive ring first emerged, but it soon became standard practice, allowing each aircraft in the formation to defend the other's tail, the observer of one machine firing his top gun and the observer of the next machine using his front gun, so that any attacker had at least 2 guns firing at him. Anticipating the Loughborough Circle of 1917 and echoing the BF-110's tactics employed during the Battle of Britain. As a result, FE formations were able to fight their way home, even when confronted by large numbers of faster and more manoeuvrable German fighters. Many have testified to the great strength of the airframe and its ability to return safely. It was also no slouch in ability to endure significant damage and combat, boasting at least 18 fighter or observer aces. 15 of these served at one time or another with 20 Squadron. During the summer of 1916, the 120 horsepower Beardmore engine was gradually replaced by the 160 horsepower Beardmore. The new engine increased the FE-2B's top speed by up to 10 miles per hour, and the service ceiling from 9,000 to 11,000 feet, although this was still inferior to the Rolls-Royce-powered FE-2D. Much as these improvements were welcome, the squadrons discovered that, initially at least, reliability was significantly worse. As more aircraft became available, the opportunity was taken to increase individual establishments from 12 to 18 aircraft. This process saw 20 Squadron give up the FE-2B in favour of the more powerful FE-2D. As early as August 1916, individual FE-2Bs were undertaking night bombing against German airfields and transportation systems, anticipating the role that they were to perform for the remainder of the war. The success of these early operations, and the limited interference from searchlights, anti-aircraft fire and enemy fighters, may well have influenced the later decision to employ the FE exclusively on night bombing. In numerical terms, the heyday of the FE daylight operations came in January 1917, when a total of over 120 machines equipped 7 of the 38 Royal Flying Corps squadrons available on the Western Front, including the recently arrived 57 Squadron. This was also the month that saw a member of 20 Squadron become the only non-commissioned officer to win the Victoria Cross for Valour in the air. Flight Sergeant Thomas Mottershead had joined the Royal Flying Corps on the outbreak of war and was selected for flying training in May 1916. After brief service as an instructor, he joined 25 Squadron at Auchel on the 6th of July 1916. Mottershead soon proved to be a brave and energetic pilot, winning the Distinguished Conduct Medal on the 22nd of September in an attack against the railway station at Somain, destroying an ammunition train and shooting down an attacking monoplane. Early in the new year, after a period of home leave, he was posted to 20 Squadron, based at Clermarais. On the 7th of January 1917, Mottershead and his observer, Lieutenant W.E. Gower, were detailed for a hostile aircraft patrol over Plug Street Wood. Attacked by two Albatross scouts and with their aircraft badly on fire, Mottershead somehow managed to return across the lines and make a safe landing, even though terribly burnt, saving the life of his observer. Sadly, Mottershead succumbed to his injuries on the 12th of January 1917. As the FE began to decline in fighting abilities, so its frontline strength began to fall away. Within 4 months of Mottershead's action, there were fewer than 80 machines on the Western Front. The first to lose its aircraft was 23 Squadron, which started to exchange its FE-2Bs for SPAD 7s in February, completing the process by the end of March. The next to follow was 57 Squadron, which lost all of its aircraft after less than 5 months' operations, replaced by the DH-4. 11 Squadron converted to the Bristol Fighter in June, as did 22 Squadron during July and 25 Squadron a month later. When 18 Squadron finished its conversion to the DH-4 at the end of August, only 20 Squadron was left to soldier on with the FE-2D. It would be wrong, however, to conclude that the FE was now hopelessly outclassed. During the summer of 1917, the aircraft showed time and time again that, handled aggressively and with a well-trained crew, it was able to inflict losses on German fighters that, on paper at least, outperformed it in every respect. The FE's darkest phase was undoubtedly Bloody April. In the effort to support the Army's Arras offensive, which opened on Monday the 9th of April 1917, the Royal Flying Corps suffered extremely heavy losses in machines and personnel. Since their Somme failure, the German Air Service had reorganised and re-equipped. The Royal Flying Corps' forward strategy, involving hostile aircraft patrols at least 6 miles beyond the lines, coupled with an interdiction campaign against targets in the rear areas, invited substantial attrition in the face of the enemy's technical superiority. However, the scale of wastage was unprecedented. The 6 remaining FE squadrons paid the highest price, seeing 70 aircraft destroyed from a frontline strength of just over 100 machines. The only compensating factor, in the face of such heavy losses, was that the fighter squadrons succeeded in largely protecting the Royal Flying Corps' Army Cooperation aircraft, allowing their crews to direct accurate and sustained artillery fire in support of the ground offensive. To provide some balance to this picture, it is helpful to consider the achievements of the remaining FE squadrons over the following 4 months. On the 6th of July 1917, Manfred von Richthofen, the highest scoring ace of the First World War, was brought down by fire from 2nd Lieutenant A.E. Woodbridge in an FE-2D of 20 Squadron flown by Captain D.C. Connell. Later that month, in a carefully planned operation, a formation of 20 Squadron machines deliberately enticed a large group of German fighters into a pre-arranged trap over Polygon Wood. the supporting squadrons were slow to arrive, and the eight FE-2Ds had to conduct a running fight against superior numbers for over 40 minutes. More than 30 enemy fighters were eventually claimed destroyed for the loss of just one Fee flown by 2nd Lieutenants GTW Burkitt and TAM Lewis, who had lagged behind the main formation because of engine problems. Although actual German losses were fewer than claimed, the incident still underscores the point that even in the twilight of its career as a day fighter, the Fee was able to hold its own. 20 squadrons' last victories with the Fee were recorded on the 17th of August 1917, bringing their total to over 200 since February 1916, a remarkable record. It is equally remarkable that the Fee had by now been serving successfully on the Western Front for over 2 years, and would do so at night for another 16 months. No other aircraft type employed during the First World War could boast a similar longevity or arguably excite the same level of affection from those who flew her. It is a hugely impressive story for a machine designed before the First World War even started. Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.